Hey, it's Bob Stauffer. I just wanted to let you know that you can listen to Oilers Now ad-free on Amazon Music, included with Prime.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Oilers Now with Bob Stauffer, weekdays at noon on Oilers Radio, 630 CHED.
We return to Oilers Now with Bob Stauffer, brought to you by Digitex. Office supplies at huge savings?
Yeah, Digitex does that.
Digitex.ca on Oilers Radio, 630 CHED.
You know, I hear that Digitex ad. It's 12:35 in Edmonton, by the way. I'm going to bring Dave Campbell back in momentarily. You know, Dave, so Hugh Porter knows what he's doing because he's got Kelsey Campbell's voice in on that ad. He's got Brian Hall doing the commercials with him, and then he's got me doing the live liner. So he's got like three different personalities from the station here involved in his Digitex campaign, including Halsey.
It's like a good quarterback who spreads the offense around.
That's exactly what Hugh's done. And I got to tell you, you saw the movie Risky Business?
Yes.
Do you remember the line, Princeton needs Joel at the end of the movie?
Yes.
I would suggest to you that Oilers Now needs Hugh Porter from Digitex. I'm just saying, he's a very popular guy.
Thank you, Hugh. Yes. Thank you.
Yes, especially in Kelowna in like August. That's just leave it at that. I'm not naming any locations or anything, right? The Grand Okanagan. Anyhow, I digress. All right, welcome back. This is Oilers Now. Bob Stauffer with you. And I'll tell you that guests on our show receive gift certificates to Roost Chris Steakhouse. Roost Chris, it's the greatest steak you've ever had. Follow Sizzle to 9990 Jasper Avenue. Tell Maggie and the staff Oilers Now sent you. We bring aboard one of the most popular guests we've had on the show since day one. He's actually been with us all 8 years that we've now been at 630 CHED. From NHL Hockey and Rogers, our lead analyst with Hockey Night in Canada. I can no longer use this line, Craig Simpson. You are no longer the last Edmonton Oiler to score 50 or have a 50th goal of the season scored as an Oiler. And you know what? You showed a lot of class afterwards congratulating Leon Draisaitl because it happened. That must have been a cool moment for you as well as you watched that.
Oh, I was very pleased for him. I think you look at the kind of season he had and the kind of push that he went on, about the last 20, 25 games of the season where he had that one stretch that really brought him into the conversation of being close to 50. As I said on game, 81, I think he would have been so devastated had he not been able to get it because he had so many good chances. He had the goalpost with an empty net. And, you know, all you would think about through the course of your time afterwards is the ones that you missed. So I did find it interesting. It's almost with him scoring and then Connor getting hurt, I thought he kind of ran out of gas because, you know, that, I think the opportunity was there to at least tie Ovechkin for the Richard Trophy. But I thought a lot of the wind came out of his sails after, you know, he got the relief of getting it and then all the game, the disappointment with Connor getting hurt and the uncertainty there. So, yeah, heck of a season, really excited. And, you know, that's what those kind of milestones are there for, is for people to try to achieve them and get them, and couldn't have been happier for them.
Here's the thing, Craig. If you watch highlights of Craig Simpson coming out of Michigan State back in the day, you could see that you were going to be a goal scorer. You had good hands. You were net front presence. You were good on tips. You know what I mean? You knew where to go to score. I don't think it was a surprise that you could, you know, you would score goals in the NHL level. After seeing Leon playing Prince Albert, I got to tell you, I like to think I'm a know-it-all, and there's about 35,000 people listening to the show right now that might that might know more about hockey than me. Maybe not, but you know what I'm saying. I did not see Leon being this prolific of a goal scorer, did you?
Yeah, well, yes and no. I think that if you look at him and you sort of sense what his strengths are, you would say good patience and control with the puck, a great passer. He's a forehand and a backhand passer, which you know, not as a dying art, but that's a great asset to have, to be able to pass it both ways, to be able to take advantage of both sides. I think he shows really depth with his touch. You know, for a big man, he's got soft hands, and he can feather those little saucer passes across. So I think if you grilled him of what his instinct was when he came into the league, I think he would have said, you know, I'm a passer and I can really play that game. But when, you know, we've talked so often about reading the situation that you're in, and when you come to an environment where now all of a sudden you look at what Connor does and how much focus and attention he brings every time he touches the puck, I think he was very smart and worked really hard at saying, if I'm going to get a chance to play with him, and at first maybe it's just on the power play, maybe it's a few times at the end of a shift or start of a shift, it ended up being, you know, playing on the left wing with him. But I think what he realized was, I got to explore and really improve on my my quick release, my in tight plays, because Connor attracts so much attention, you know, very much like Wayne in his days, where you, if you're playing with a guy like that, you got to watch what the defenders are doing and where they're going. And so often, Bob, you have the puck on 97 stick, and three of the four guys who are defending in that play, eyes are all on him. So if you get into that mindset of finding that soft seam, and I said before, I think Leon did such a good job of backing up into an area or finding that cross seam pass and just moving your body, but always being ready to shoot. I thought he really developed that, grew confidence in that. And he also reminded me a lot of Mark Messier with that little forehand, backhand between the legs on the breakaway. You know, he really did grow in confidence with that. And that's what I was saying about soft hands and real confidence with the puck and controlling where you're taking the goaltender. So, you know, the long answer to that is, I always felt that he did have a good shot. He had a deceptive shot. I think he really worked on the quickness of his release and always being ready to shoot. And then what was unique to him, you know, unlike a lot of players, is just that confidence of those little plays in tight to open up the goaltender's five hole. Because trust me, I think it'll be a heck of a lot more difficult for him next year to duplicate those kind of goals on goaltenders, because goaltenders will have a book on them. Goaltenders won't open up. They'll be more patient. And, you know, all it'll take is early in the year coming in on one of those breakaways and trying that. And, you know, you look bad when you miss those because it's a weak shot that just goes off the goaltender's stick. I think that'll be an adjustment for him next year because he scored so many good goals like that this year.
Yeah, he scored a couple of shorthanded goals the exact same way. One in Nashville, yep, and then one against San Jose. Turnover, gets a breakaway coming off the left side, and then opens up the goalie and sifts it through him five.
And to me, that was like watching Mark Messier. You know, yeah, I was usually trailing that kind of play, but yeah, to me, that's where I, Bob, as a shooter, never had the confidence in that kind of move. I don't think I even attempted that one time. And so it is one of those things that you just have to have real faith in the in your ability to open up that five hole. And I think that's where, you know, that's what's so incredible about Ovechkin's, what, you know, 850 goal or eight.
And 149.
Yeah. 149. And because you always have to change. You always have to be able to make some sort of adjustment, because every goaltender now, when you play, you know, the Edmonton Oilers, okay, you got to worry about McDavid, but you're going, God, you got a 50-goal scorer that you go in with a book and say, where do I expect the shot to come from? Where do I expect him to go? If he's in on a breakaway, what's he going to do? And that's what's great about, you know, longevity of being a scorer, a good scorer year after year, is you're going to have to battle those one-on-one with the goaltenders when they have a real sense of what you like to do.
Yeah, I watched all 50 of his goals last night. There are a couple of great videos out there. There's one that's got the McDavid highlights this year from a guy named Connor McMatthews. That's, yep, what he goes as his handle. And then there was somebody put a compilation of the 50 that Leon scored. He had at least five goals where McDavid had the puck sort of in the, you know, the center offensive zone, faked a move to the right, then went to his left. He's a left shot, drags everybody over, and then reverses, yep, back. The goaltender's thinking he's going to shoot it, and instead he slides it right back through his seam, and there's Leon Rifling at home. I don't think that play is going away. That play,
no,
because McDavid's so gifted and talented that the goaltender have to play it honest. So the Oilers had some individual success stories. Ultimately, they didn't get it done. We knew this, Craig, basically a week and a half and 2 weeks ago. I got to ask you a question just in terms of from an optics perspective, but how quickly do you think Bob Nicholson has to have somebody in place as a general manager here?
Well, I was thinking that watching, I was traveling, but watching some of the press conference, and I was expecting you to talk about it a little bit. I was really surprised that he had Keith Gretzky up there with him. To me, it's a little bit of a confusing balance between the two. It says to me, if they're truly, it's all out there that you're going to have interviews and you're going to make a change. Okay, everybody understands that Keith's in the mix. I thought it was an uncomfortable position to put Keith in. I thought it was an odd one in terms of trying to make some discussion points about what you're going to do and how you're going to approach the draft when you say, well, am I going to be in that role or what role am I going to play? As you know, Bob, any general manager that's going to get hired who is, let's say, an assistant general manager with a team right now, there's a bit of a delay on what you can and can't do around the draft. So, you know, teams aren't going to allow their top assistant general manager to go to another team, whether it's in the same conference or even just in the league, and bring all their scouting and all their reports on players. So often, it's an odd time again, because anybody who you're going to bring in will be somewhat limited in terms of the draft, and you're not going to start fresh on what's happening at the draft. So I think from Keith's perspective and the scouts that are in there, you've got to be prepared going forward that you're doing the draft, that this is where we're going to discuss over the next months with whoever gets brought in. I think the interesting thing, though, is, and you've talked about it and a number of the fans were, you have to improve on either the deal making or the NHL scouting that you've done.
Yep.
Because as you laid out there, the deals that were made, and I go back right to the very first draft, the Reinhardt deal on draft day is what was the beginning of the end, in my opinion. It turned out to be such a bad deal and such a bad trade. You could argue the different ones with Hall and Larson, okay, and then this year was a disaster. So, I do think that it was an odd thing to me to have Keith up there. I agreed with what I listened to before about Speck talking about what type of person Keith is and what he's done from a work perspective. But I just didn't think it was the right time to have him sitting next to Bob there.
It was really interesting, back to the question that got asked about, Jason, the way he structured that, the way he structured that question, he was giving Keith the opportunity to distance himself
from
the deals. And like a good teammate, he didn't distance. And we know self-serving people, Craig, in this business. A self-serving guy would say, well, you know what? For 11 of the first 12 weeks of the regular season, I was on the road scouting. Yes, I spoke to Peter, but, that's more on... He didn't do that. He said, And to me, that revealed a lot about his character. And not that I already didn't know it, because you know what? The first year Keith was here, he was with us about half the time in the fall. Because he wanted to get to know different parts of the organization. And then he went out on the scouting trails sort of in the second half, right of the 16-17 season. But I did think that that revealed, and you know what? Maybe you can educate our listeners, because you have a personal relationship more so with Wayne. But that's kind of the way the Gretzkys are, aren't they? Like, they are team-first people.
Oh, for sure. And let's face it, the amount of venom and vitriol that's out there in terms of, what's going to be done and who's going to be a part of it and who's getting traded, is a difficult landmines for him to go around. And I feel for him in a lot of ways. And, like Speck was saying, I'm not sure this is going to be the place that makes sense for him to be the general manager just because of all that.
Yep.
You start on a negative. And that's where, to me, I didn't understand the messaging there. It's one of two things. It's either just because you didn't want to exclude Keith from that press conference, you had him there, or you're trying to send the message that he's going to be here. It was a little confused.
Craig, could it be a third thing? Could it be Keith was there to help Bob out in the hockey stuff? If there was specific questions,
sure.
Right? Not that, look, Bob was involved in the Olympic program and did a terrific job sort of on the administrative side of things with Hockey Canada and grew
that. But it's a different animal. But it's a complete different animal.
So in the minutia, Keith was there as a backup to address those sort of things.
So here's the way I feel, though. I think the clock is ticking. Okay, the playoffs start tonight. There's 2 months going forward. The draft, as much as it seems like it's in the distance, will come very, very quickly. And that's what I was saying about all the legwork that's been done on the amateur side isn't going to change overnight, even if you have a general manager come in who's not right now with another team. You know, that ultimately would allow and free up the general manager to do more. But as you know, Bob, if you're hiring someone at the end when their team gets eliminated, let's say it's mid-May, it's not a Stanley Cup final team, they can't come in and completely take over the draft. You're going to a new organization. You'll have restrictions from your old organization about what you can be a part of. So that's a difficult decision. So I do think there's one of two things. That the team has already made their decision about the draft and saying, Keith, you're going to be here no matter what. You've done the legwork of organizing that. It's your draft in that regard. But that's a tough one, too, if you're going to have to wait for 2 months to say who's our new general manager coming in. And I do agree, you have to give that general manager the ability to say, what do I need? Who do I need to be around? No GM is going to come in and within a week or two be able to change all the scouts and be able to change all that before the draft. That's just an impossibility, and there's really no scouting to do then anyway, so it doesn't necessarily matter. I do think, though, it's imperative that the new hire does just have the ability to come in and say, this is who I have that I trust and I feel, and this is the bodies that I need to bring in and make the changes that you have to.
All right. Well, we should mention Peter Chiarelli came in April 24th, and on June 20th, of course, he hired Todd McClellan in May of 2015. On June 20th, he fired Stu McGregor, head amateur scout. He fired Maury Gehr, head pro scout. He fired Brad Davis and Ken Hawley. They were amateur guys, and I think they moved out Dave Semenko at that time as well, God rest his soul.
Yeah.
So there was an illustration of where a guy made some moves.
And there's the timeline, though, if you need to take a little bit of time.
Sure.
Your work at the higher end, those guys aren't actually scouting at that point anyway.
Yeah.
And the work's been done, and you get a feel of what you like about them, what you dislike, the strengths, weaknesses, and you have to be able to make that change. Because the bulk of the scouting and organization is done at that point going into the draft.
All right, some quick hitters for you. Todd McClellan, should he go to Los Angeles or Buffalo? Looks like he's got his option. Where would you go if you were him?
I laughed and said, is it not again Buffalo being the leverage point of the NHL? If you remember Mike Babcock, Buffalo was the leverage point before the Leafs. It was like, oh, he's going to sign in Buffalo, and then he went on. And I couldn't help but chuckle when I thought of the West and Los Angeles being where everyone was saying it. You know what? It's a scenario that says if you're looking from an opportunity-wise, from a team perspective that's not in cap trouble and maybe getting a little older, Buffalo is probably the upside and a better opportunity. Again, though, if you're making a decision, you know, I think so often, just like players who are free agents, lifestyle and where do you want to live and where do you want to be, Los Angeles is going to continue to try to be a competitive team. I think Buffalo probably has the ability to change that and turn that around and has the better, younger assets than Los Angeles does.
All right.
But that doesn't mean he's necessarily going to go there.
All right, Craig. So the Maple Leafs, and you worked the series last year, they lost in 7 to Boston. They didn't have Kadri for 3 games. They've added Tavares. They've added Muzzin. Why is everybody thinking Toronto's got no chance in this series? I don't get it.
I think you just look at the style of play and the defensive possibilities. You know, there's one thing about being a good offensive team, but let's not kid ourselves. It's like the best offensive line in the series is Boston's, not Toronto's.
Right.
You know, the Bergeron line has an incredible run, 260 points between the three of them. The other guys have 223, I believe, the Tavares group. So, you know, as much as you say Toronto can score offensively, I just think that when you come right down to it, the style of play suits the Bruins a little bit better. The history is one, a little bit more experience of winning and winning in a certain type of way. And that's what will be the great challenge for Toronto is to, you know, you got to get over that hurdle at some point. I think it's actually a really good thing for the Leafs from just a focus standpoint, from a desire standpoint to get the Bruins again. You know, you just hope you can overcome some of the little things that have crept in the series. Last year, I was just looking back, the top players for the Bruins were far better. You know, in the series, they produced more. They had secondary scoring. Jake DeBrusk had 5 goals. Sean Corrali had a couple in that series. Like their role players played better than the top guys in the Toronto Maple Leafs. So you hope that the improvements that the Leafs have made and the depth that they have will change that balance. But like in any situation where you haven't beaten a team in a playoff series, you just got to dig in and find a way to get it done. And it might not be the way you think it is. It might not be in that fast, free-flowing game. It might be winning 2 out of the 4 games you have to win in 1-0 or 2-1 fashion. And that's not typically something that Toronto's been able to do all year.
All right, and I'm going to put you on the spot just to wrap up. Craig Simpson, lead analyst, Hockey Night in Canada. He's working Boston. Toronto starts tomorrow night in Beantown. If the Leafs lose in 4 or 5, is there any chance Mike Babcock's out in Toronto?
Well, it's an interesting question. I think there's enough eyebrows raised when, you know, Sheldon Keefe got an extension in the AHL, some of the comments about depth from Babcock and Kyle Dubas. If they got swept, I would say I'd entertain a possibility. But, Bob, I don't think it's going to happen now, but I think it might open the door that next year is a, you know, you got to win something or changes are going to be made.
All right, great stuff. Craig, as always, we appreciate your time. I can honestly say this. I will be watching the series you're working on from
yeah,
start.
Yeah, it should be a good one.
It'll be a good one, absolutely. Great stuff, Craig. Thank you for your time.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That's Craig Simpson, 1256 in Edmonton. This is Oilers Now. Still to come on today's show, Mark Edwards of HockeyProspects.com. We're going to hope to get a conversation I had with Darnell Nurse as well. And we do have that. We found it. It went missing for about 24 hours. And Jay Woodcroft. And there's something coming down the pipe with the American Hockey League shortly as well.
Oilers Now with Bob Stauffer. Weekdays at noon on Oilers Radio, 630 CHED.